Welcome back to Down to Brass Tacks. You still there, sir?
Of course, man.
Man, I'm glad enough. I'm glad you called today because I've been aching to talk some politics for a while.
Man, you know look, whenever.
No, well, and I'm glad that you're indulging me.
Yeah.
The reality is St. George, and let's just be clear about this. You're saying that there's a possibility that the goodly doctor may go up in St. George North to run.
Yeah.
The goodly doctor has to go out there and turn back 4,000 votes, right? But currently, the Barbados Labour Party. You wait a minute. You wait a minute.
Go down that road.
The Barbados Labour Party have 4,700 votes, or 80% of the popular vote, 81% in that constituency in the last election. Democratic Labour Party has 745, or 13% of the popular vote in that election. The swing required to move that seat is a whopping...
Hold on, wait.
It's a whopping 31%. The highest recorded swing in the history of Barbados in the last election was the highest historic, was 36%. So you are telling me that you believe the goodly doctor has a ghost of a chance of going up there and putting down the same kind of performance that my friend in St. John put down against... against George Pilgrim to reverse those 4,000 votes and win that seat? This is what you're telling me?
I'm telling you that you keep going down a road that don't work. Tell me how much votes Griffith turned back in St. John.
It's about the same number.
Oh, and it gets turned back. And it gets turned back.
It gets turned back,
It gets turned back.
Right.
But anything could happen. Don't go along that road.
No. Because what you were telling me then is that the doctor is as good as Griffith. And indeed, you're telling me that the person, the person that the Barbados Labour Party is standing up there, who you and I know very well who it is as bad as George Pilgrim.
But what I tell you, it is what the people want, not with you standing. Try and make sure that they are talking politics. You're not talking about a straight by night person that don't do research. Richard Haynes went in St. George North, where he came from, and was turned back by the electorate in St. George, who was an outstanding politician at the time. Whoever you say now that don't have no status in St. George has an uphill battle. I tell you that. I come out of St. George, man. Don't come and tell me that.
Let me ask you, because honestly, if that's what you say, let's talk about Barbados Labour Party candidates. Who you hearing calling for up there?
I hear Tony Moore.
Uh-huh.
And I'm hearing the one that they just met, the president of the party. So all of them is people have no...
You didn't hear Kevin Rowe?
Kevin Rowe? I hear about the Keir Burke.
No, Kevin Rowe is a Newbury man.
Who is Kevin Rowe?
He's a young fella that is from Newbury. I know the guy. He runs a business in St. George, you know.
Well, listen, Kevin Rowe is related to me. He would have been related to a man by the name of Boyd Rowe.
Uh-huh.
You understand? But I hear now about Kevin Rowe. I tell you what I hear about, but let me give you a background. One out of those two candidates that I mentioned to you just now, Dr. Sekou and what your name though? Dr. Sekou and Glenn Clark. Those are two of the most genuine, respectable people in St. George. You know that if Glenn Clark had to choose a running partner, he would have chosen Sekou as his running partner. And if Sekou had to choose a running partner, she would have chosen Glenn Clark. Those two had a social understanding and respect each other. And I'm saying that Sekou, if what I heard is true, is a formidable candidate for St. George North.
I think somebody pulling your leg. Look, let me tell you this. I don't believe she can run. I mean, I don't think she would. She can run, certainly, but I don't believe that. She's all of this.
You don't believe nothing.
No, but you hold on. You hold on.
Nothing.
In the last election, right? In St. George South, which is right next door. No, in St. George's South, which is right next door, SMS, to get 1,000 votes. Slightly more than Jetta, but it wasn't that much more.
Well, but you so she got beat
by 4,000 votes too.
Lieutenant got beat in St. George's South by Russell Lowe.
Jetta got beat by 3,600 votes. She got beat by 3,900 votes.
But what that is to do with the status today? You believe the same people that vote last election? They vote the same way as the vote last election.
But I don't believe there will be significant changes. And I'm saying to you that you're saying to me, you are telling me somebody who underperformed to that extent. Somebody who underperformed to that extent. Somebody who underperformed in the election before that can leave St. George South, come in St. George North and turn back 3,000 votes. Marcel, come off it, man.
And they said John and turn back 4,000. I didn't increase.
Huh? No, you talk that talk with Dennis.
Talk that talk with Dennis tomorrow.
You
in trouble now because you got the impression and you keep telling the Democratic Labour Party that they got to look for new people. But I want to tell you no politically because I like to cross swords with you on a friendly matter. I want to tell you and again learn you something. You never win a battle with recruits. You got to got people who were there before you. Somebody take up an army and go to win a battle with recruits. And you both there telling democratically if I look for new people, you misleading the public, Peter.
You know that they say the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting the outcome to be different. That's the last thing I would say to you in relation to that Democratic Labour Party.
Because you're in trouble.
If the Democratic Labour Party won't bring back Dennis Lowe and a set of other people that they ran already, bring them back. They should bring back Patrick Todd. And I will go further. Bring back Frandell Stewart. Why don't bring back Frandell Stewart too?
Bring back a whole horse and it will have
and bring back Patrick Todd.
You got to
bring back Patrick Todd and running back up in St. Michael Northeast against Mia.
They can bring back Esther Bicycle. That they beat winner.
No problem. Not me. Them.
Well, right now, I belong to the party. But I am a fair share in politics.
But listen, sir, I am so happy. I am so happy that we finally have an election on our hands to discuss.
Of course.
Because I have been yearning for electoral activity for a while. And the opposition leader tell me that they got a next one coming to better fit.
But Peter, let me finish in this one. Sunday morning, I received about 6 calls asking me if I come into St. George North branch meetings with the selection of the candidate because they know I would be involved in every platform with Glenn Clark. And they had to let them know, listen, I hang up my boots. All I'm doing is critiquing politics, you know. I have got my fair share to the Democratic Labour Party, and my fair promise to the Barbados Labour Party, and I keep it far from them. I just got to deal with critics, look at what is happening, and explain it to the public as they see it. But I'm interested in none of them. So
All right, well, we can talk, hopefully, either next week or week after, whenever Dennis bring me back on, and we will continue this conversation, because I'm hoping by then that I will hear some kind of story about nominations. I honestly think that is between Esther and Jetta. I am really divided. I really don't know who would be a better candidate. Quite frankly, I think that maybe what they should do is send one of the leaders, either George or Verna, to lead from the front. You know. Anyhow, it's interesting. Thanks a lot for calling, sir, and thanks for bringing up the politics talk. I appreciate it very much. Down to Brass Tacks. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mr. Wickham. How are you doing?
Yes, sir. I'm good. And yourself?
Not too bad. I got two little things to discuss with you. First, you see the foolishness that the ZR men and the minibus men doing. All the government got to do is bring some new buses and put them on the road, and then we just drive with the diesel. That's one. The second one is, I hear people complaining about the transfer of principals and things from schools. To me, that sounds so ridiculous that it isn't funny. You want to tell me that I work in some place and my employer transferred me again the same money that it got to end with me? Why everything that this government do or people do that these people got to find something with parents want to be principals too? What they should do is learn their children manners that the principals and the teachers won't got them to work to do? Is that what they got to do?
Hmm.
You don't think so?
So a big part of the challenge is that I think people get accustomed to principals. They develop personal relationship with principals, and they will kind of like life to continue as it was. I remember well, sir, the affinity that I had for my principal, which would have been Captain Barker. And even though there were moments when you didn't particularly like him, if you heard the suggestion that he was going to be moved, it changes your perspective in terms of what the institution stands for. And it's one of those realities that I understand. I appreciate what you're saying, that nobody ain't got a job put down. Okay, work for your ministry. Ministry could put you wherever they want. And that is, to me, administratively, it is clear. At the same time, however, people do develop intimate relationships with an institution, with the teachers, with the parents. And I can understand how a parent feels when they hear that this person is going, because the person represents the school for them, you know?
Man and woman, this got a bracket, and it's got very, very deep intimate relationship.
But sir, it's be painful. It's be painful. Huh? Divorces be painful.
It be painful.
Divorces are painful. So if you're gonna say that as a man and woman could break up, is the same thing. They could break up, but it's not easy.
Mostly painful.
Men is gonna jump off buildings and all kind of thing when the woman left them. So you know.
Well, to be honest, I find that we Belgians just pick some foolish arguments. I can't see how that should affect me.
Mm-hmm.
It shouldn't affect me at all. Thanks, Mr.
Well, all right, sir. Thanks a lot for calling. I kind of take in both sides in this issue, because I do understand how people feel when they hear that there's a principle changing. But in the final analysis, you're right. The ministry hires all of them, and they can move them around as they see fit. Down to Brass Tacks. Good afternoon.
Yes, how are you doing?
How are you doing, sir?
Yeah, fine. whenever the St. George North by-election is called, I believe the BLP will continue its many ways, right? Because Mr. Clark contested 7 elections. He lost the first one, but he won the other 6 one, and quite handsomely as well. When you look at his track record, you will see that he grew from strength to strength. Now, even the one that he lost in 1991, he was able to garner 44.3% of the votes. But obviously from 1994, he increased all along the way. Sometimes it was 79%, 69%, 70%. And as you rightly said, the last election he won by 80.8%. 80.8%. So you could round it off at 81%. So, you know, when you couple this, when you couple all of this, right, we got an extremely poor set of opposition parties going to Barbados. You know, they're just asking questions. They ain't bringing anything to the table. They're being critical, say they're dealing with context as opposed to content, right? You got the D's. The D's should be in sackcloth and ashes all in now for what they have done to Barbados. They virtually left Barbados broken, right? No foreign exchange, virtually no foreign exchange. The third highest debt for GDP in the world at 175% after Japan, which had 236%, and Greece 182%. Now, you got a PDP leader that after the cabinet was announced on the 26th of May, a couple of days later, he signed in as the opposition leader. Okay? He said at that meeting, when he said at the sign-in, that he didn't even consider being forming a party. He would function as an independent leader of the opposition. Earlier, about Esteban Sucu. Esteban Sucu lost a deposit last election. Yes, you were also calling the correct numbers as well. Look, when this election is called, a lot of people are going to lose their deposit. All those who contest the election against the BLP member can lose their deposit. Because they have not done, the opposition parties have not done a single thing since they were in opposition, besides asking questions and finding faults. So, you know.
Stassman, I'm with you. I'm with you in terms of our overall analysis. So I don't know that we need to waste callers' time. We agree that the election outcome is a foregone conclusion. Statistically, as I was saying to a reporter yesterday, it would be easier for Jephthah or whoever they sent to walk on water than to win that seat in St. George North. So I don't know that that's going to happen. I think the issue, though, is whether or not the Democratic Labour Party should contest it, period. And that's a question that I would ask you, if you could just give me a very quick response, because we're almost ready for the latest.
Well, anyone that who contests it, they will get the same results. So it's up to them. They could go and contest it and get the same results, poor results. So, well, it's up to them. So they could contest it, or, you know, them, they could. But,
no. All right. Stassman, thanks a lot for calling. It's always good to talk politics to you. Dr. Brass Tacks, you can call us on 434-1790. You can email me directly at peter.w.wickham@gmail.com. Having some challenges with the chat today, 266-IVOB. So if you use that, you'll be talking directly to Dennis. We have on the line, well, not a caller, but we have on the line the director of the Barbados Tax Authority, if I got the name correctly. Are you there, ma'am?
Hi, no, it's the communications officer.
Communications officer, right. That's right, Ms. Lazar. Ms. Lazar, welcome from the Barbados Revenue Authority.
Hi, Peter.
And I'm trusting that you're not calling to tell us that tax rates have been increased.
Oh, no, no, no. I'm actually good. I have good news. So we've extended the 10% discount deadline for land tax bills this year. It's been extended to next week, Wednesday, September 30th, so people have a bit more time, and we also have an installment option available, so you can make it in three installments. So you can pay your first installment by next Wednesday, September 30th, and make sure you make the final installment by November 30th. So we're giving people more time and more options, and we have also extended the 5% deadline. That's now December 31st, the end of the year.
Okay, so the deadline for payment is extended, and the deadline for receiving the 10% discount has been extended.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, it's been extended to next week, Wednesday, and we also have the installments available. So if you want to make it in installments and you can't pay the full thing by next week, Wednesday, you can make an installment payment then, and then make two others, or you could do it in two if you want.
Okay.
But you have to make the final payment by November 30th, right?
All right.
I wanted to remind people that we also have online payments available. Sorry, I was cutting you off. Sorry.
No. Actually, you're going exactly where I was going to ask you to go, which is the question of online payments. So feel free.
Right. So we have many, many options. There's EasyPay Plus. That's at easypay.gov.bb. We also have directions on how to use that on our social media and website pages, Barbados Revenue Authority. We're very easy to find. And you can pay on the Cave Shepherd mobile app for those who have that app. Sure Pay Online as well is taking land tax payments. And you can pay on your online banking platform of First Caribbean and First Citizens Bank. So we have lots of options.
Right. And I just wanted to say, Erica, that I availed myself of the online payment facility very recently. And I was actually quite impressed at how easy it was to use. I'm currently thousands of miles away, and the process worked very easy, very simply. I was able to register and make the payment without any difficulty at all. Of course, having the money is challenging still. And I do look forward to the day that you will call us and tell us a way that we can get it done without having the money. But in the meantime, we appreciate that you're making it as easy as possible.
Right? Yeah, some people don't like to do online, so we have to have more than one option. So you can use the Dropbox as well. You can drop the check in as well, or you might just come in and pay if you want to. So it's up to you, but there's more time and there are many options to pay. So that's the message.
Okay. All right. So Ms. Lazar, I want to thank you very much for calling and to telling us that we have now an extended deadline for the 10% discount.
10%,
so the 10% discount is available for an additional week, I believe.
Yes. And then if you want to do installments, you can pay pay the first installment next week, and then make sure you pay the final one by Independence Day.
Great. Okay. All right. And thank you. Thank you again so much for calling. I appreciate hearing from you and for letting the persons who listen to Brass Talks know what's happening regarding the tax situation. Thanks again. So this is Down to Brass Talks, 434-1790. We say good afternoon and welcome to the next caller.
Good afternoon, Mr. Beckham.
Hey, good afternoon, ma'am. How are you?
I am good, and you?
I'm great.
Okay. I want to mention two things. One, my niece goes to school at Charles F. Broome. She's now entering class one at Charles F. Broome. And she has to go to school 2 days, Mondays and Wednesdays. And the other half of her class has to go to school on Tuesdays and Thursdays. But what I don't like about it is that she and the other students of class in her class will be only getting online classes on Friday. And 2 days for students like my niece, who is eager to learn, always on the edge of the seat waiting for the next some essay, spelling test, something to do. I don't think 2 days is good enough, or at least put it 3 days. I think when the students are at home, for those 2 days that are at home, they should still have something to do. Even if they don't write two essays, one about how they spend the vacation, and one about what do you see COVID-19 going to happen in the future. Something. Write about something. I don't think they should just home twiddling their fingers, because then everybody, like my niece, that is on the edge of the seat waiting for the next
what's the reason for the fact that the facilities are being basically that you have less days at school? What's the reason? It's a shared facility?
Apparently so. From what I'm understanding, that's how the system is now. And the class is divided in half. So the teacher announced since last week, these are the students in her class and how it will be divided and stuff like that. But also what I did not like is that after she was put to bed on Sunday night, about 7:30, then the teacher responded at 9 o'clock or something after 9, saying that she has to go to school the next day. I didn't like that. I think that by Friday midnight, that all the parents should be known when their students will be attending school. I know some had knew well before then, but I think 9 o'clock Sunday night was too late. I also want to speak about a government. I think the Prime Minister is doing a very good job, but she needs to do a little better for the disabled community. Now, Mr. Vicker,
a little more for the disabled community.
Yes. And why is that? We have students that go to the Barbados Association for the Blind and Deaf, and they do DCSEs in math. Right now they're doing CAPE, they're waiting for the CAPE results. And a lot of the students, the lowest grade they ever got was grade 3. Lots of the students, Mr. Wickham, got ones and twos, and that's why they're doing CAPE. We even have two students that did all their subjects and got the back at grade 1 and 2 and now at UE. And we have other students that out there so capable of working, but government has not placed a policy, and that's why I think government has forgot about us. They didn't place a policy or put a policy in place so that if a place is hiring 100 workers or employees, I think a policy should be in place that 5 or 10% should go to disabled as long as we are qualified to do the job. I don't think that we should always look to say that we are prone to accidents, we're incapable of this, incapable of that. No, that is not good enough. And now that COVID has put us in the future, and I will say that because, you know, years ago you had to wait in line at MTW to pay your insurance, get your vehicle weighed and all out there. Now, most of the things are done online. Even getting a police certificate of character. A lot of things are now put online. Even Lady Jessen that was speaking to you, saying that you could do this online. But why is it that government is only remembering us when election time come around and they want us to come and vote? The same car, the same truck, the same auto vehicles to pick us up so that we can vote for them. But after elections, we are put on the back burner. It is not fair. We didn't ask to be disabled. We came into the world. Majority of us came into the world normal, like myself. And I had a brain tumor at 16 years old. I didn't give myself a brain tumor. Nobody would give themselves a brain tumor. So why is it because I am capable of working that I am put on the back burner? And not only that, why is the insurance companies looking at us and sending us letters saying we are prone to accidents, most likely to walk on the bus? And that's what the last insurance I sent with told me, that I'm most likely to walk on the bus. So with my visually impairment, I now pick up idiotic seat. So I am going like an idiot and see a bus and I can start to walk. So I don't think that's good enough. I think government needs to do more for us. Yes, we are thankful that we get the welfare and the non-contributory check, but that is not all. We don't want to stay home and wait for a check to come. People like me and a lot more. We have a young girl, Mr. Wickham. She went to school at Common Mayor. She got an exhibition, went on to UWE, went to Trinidad and studied to be a lawyer. I don't know if any firm has ever think about picking her up, but she's a well-qualified lawyer on her way too. But no, I don't think no qualified firm will look to take her up because she is blind, but she has the capability to go to school at Common Mayor. Out to all the students, majority students there, get an exhibition where a lot of them have vision and they wasn't capable of doing. She went on, she got first degree honors at UWE, which a lot of the other students that were able-bodied or sighted didn't achieve what she achieved. And I don't think that we should be overlooked. Mr. Wickham, this is 2020. COVID has pushed us into 2020. Because we were doing a lot of things. Like in 1980, 1985, 1990. But we didn't step into the millennium yet. So I know COVID is a bad thing, but it did a good for Barbados because it pushed us into doing things online and a lot more efficient in what we were doing back then. So I think it's about time. I would like you, Mr. Wickham, and Mr. Dennis Johnson, to be able to speak on these topics for us on when they're creating this policy. I want you guys to come out and speak on behalf of us because it is time, Mr. Ellis, Mr. Wickham, if I am qualified to do the job, why am I overlooked and you ain't got the same qualifications as me? You don't have the qualifications, but all you got is that you have sight. And that is not fear.
Ma'am, I let you speak without interruption for an extended period of time for several reasons, not least of which is the fact that I am completely comfortable with the arguments that you're bringing to the fore. There is no question that the disabled community, yourself included, would have experienced considerable discrimination over the years. What I don't know that is fair is to suggest that certainly me, and I don't know about Dennis, I don't listen to Dennis all the time, but I would like to think that Dennis and David do not empathize with the disabled community, because I think that is where you're being a bit unfair. I have been raising concerns about the manner in which disabled people in this country have been treated for a long time. I was one of the first people that was saying, this is more than 10 years ago, that it was time the disabled community put government in court for discrimination on the basis of the disability, for the fact that you guys had no access to the traditional public service vehicles, and you have no access to many facilities that they have all over Barbados. So I don't know that it is fair to say that we are not conversant with the issue and that we don't put the case when necessary. I also think it is also not unfair to say that this government has done nothing for you guys, right? You now have a fleet of 33 buses that can kneel down and that can take up disabled people that are designed with wide aisles so that they can accommodate wheelchairs. This is historic in the case of Barbados. We have never had that before. Of course, you have some people in the public domain saying that it would have been better to send a dedicated bus to disabled people. But I think that what we have done is best practice globally in the sense that we are saying a disabled person should be able to go and catch a regular bus like anybody else without having to make any special arrangements, because the buses ought to be retrofitted to ensure that able-bodied and disabled persons can pick them up. And I think that's significant. I bring you now to the employment rights legislation. We now have, for the first time in the history of Barbados, employment rights legislation that ensure that someone like yourself is not dismissed for the disability that they have. If that is done, it is discrimination and it is illegal. We now have to move to a stage where what you're talking about really is employment quotas, where you're saying that companies ought to set quotas regarding employment. That, ma'am, as you know, is a minefield. It's not a minefield politically, but it's a minefield in terms of employment, because you have to always be sure that the employer would argue that the type of job is the type of job that a disabled person can do almost equally with an able-bodied person. And this is something where you're going to have problems all the time, because it is really for an employer to say, I am not hiring that person because they're disabled. An employer will never say that. They will always say, I am not hiring that person because they're not as well qualified. The challenge is getting to a stage where we can get people to meet those targets. There are companies, for example, like Massey. And Massey has a sterling reputation regarding the employment of persons with disabilities. And there's not a notice a long time where they try to ensure that certain numbers of their persons have disabilities. My understanding is that from the days when it was Barbados Shipping and Trading, one of the directors was disabled, and that policy was started and has continued in that fine tradition. Government can perhaps adopt a policy that says they will employ a certain percentage of disabled people. But to me, this is part of a conversation that the disabled community now has to raise and discuss. And we just had a few minutes ago on the program, we were talking today about a national transformation initiative. And one of the first courses that they were talking about is one which is essentially geared towards helping us understand how to relate to and how to treat to persons with disabilities. So to say that nothing is happening, I think is unfair. To say that enough is happening, I would agree with you that enough is not happening and there's more that needs to be done. Now, my suggestion to you is that if you are a member of the disabled community, take a proactive position in that if you're saying now that the front line is looking at quota systems for companies and for governments, in terms of employing disabled people, put that on the table and let's start a process of lobbying to get that accepted at the national level. And I believe that you have a listening ear where government is concerned. So start to push that. But I think it would be a mistake to suggest that nothing has been done and that we're starting at zero, because I fundamentally think, ma'am, that that's a bit unfair. But I would agree with you that enough has not been done, and there's certainly a whole lot more that needs to be done. Anything from you in response?
Well, I would like to apologize to you, Ellis and Johnson. I know that you guys lobby for us, but let me explain it to you. I think that when we get this policy put in place, I think we need the three of you to come up and guide us the way we should do it, because a lot of us probably know to go on march and send letters and stuff like that, but we might not know the right tape on how to do it. I understand. So let me apologize for that. But another thing too, yes, we are very thankful for the kneeling buses, but for those who are blind or vision impaired, I would like the public to know, the kneeling buses are good for the disabled. But as a blind or vision impaired person walking on the road, because they don't have this decibels to hear it, you might think the road is clear because we listen with our ears. And we might think the road is clear because we're not hearing anything. And a bus might be coming around the corner or might be coming on the straight road. So I think that government needs to put some decibels on the bus so that those who are blind or vision impaired that use their hearing still of their eyes to hear, and well, you know what I mean, to see too, you understand? that I think the decibels should be a lot louder. And that's one of the things that I like, that I would like them to do to the new buses. So on that behalf, Mr. Vickham, thank you.
I'm Peter. No, don't go yet. Don't go yet. My name is Peter, but don't go yet. I was under the impression at the convention, because I had raised this issue before about persons who were not sighted being unable to see a bus and stop it. And I'd been told that the convention is that bus drivers are trained that whenever they see a white cane, a person standing at a bus stop with a white cane, they're supposed to stop automatically without waiting to see the person put their hand out. Is that not the case?
No, that's not the case. Many times we are at the bus stop and many buses pass us. And sometimes they have to ask some person if the bus is coming. And you put out your hand and ask the bus where you're going. St. Lawrence Castle, because we're on Bay Street. And we're waiting for the city circle or another bus to get us where we're going. And the buses don't stop. If you don't stop them, Mr. Vickham, they do not stop. So I know a lot.
No, but that's not good enough. Because, as I said, when I raised this issue before, because we had a conversation about persons who were not sighted, not being able to hear buses come in. And this was even before when the buses were diesel buses that make a lot of noise. And I remember being told at that time, there's a conversation a long time ago on the radio. I remember being told at that time that once a bus driver sees a white cane, they're supposed to stop. And that is the convention that they're trained in. If it is not the case and they're not being trained in that convention, then that's an easy point that can be raised with the transport board, you know. Because it's going to be even harder now. The buses are electric and you're not going to hear them coming. So for sure, that's something that's fairly easy that can be done. Whenever a bus sees a person with a white cane, and my assumption is that all persons who are not sighted would carry the white cane so they can be easily identifiable, they should stop. And as far as other issues are concerned, you know, your council, for example, you have someone like Carrie-Anne Eiffel who sat in the highest level of government in this country. And in my opinion, you guys have good people to lobby on your behalf, you know? I think that you're well-placed to lobby regarding certain things. I mean, you've called me and you've spoken and articulated yourself very well. A lot of people listen to this program, and I'm sure that the two suggestions that you have made have already been noted in some regard by persons, which is one, that we have to look at pushing for a quota system regarding large companies and certainly government in terms of employing the disabled people. And then secondly, that we have to push for an understanding that buses should stop at bus stops whenever they see a person that is blind there. The bus drivers ought to stop and inquire whether they need the bus to go somewhere or whether, you know, there's another facility. So those are two things. I think that was a productive part of the conversation that we were able to get two things out of it. And I mean, if anytime there's anything else that call, you know, call the program. Myself, Dennis, David, we're always open to these kinds of conversations regarding things that need to be done to help the disabled community. There's no question about that. And as I said, when you heard the conversation today with Allison, she made the point very clearly that government's concept, and certainly her role as an agency of government, understands that a new and diversified Barbados is one that has disabled people that need to fully participate. And it is not by accident that one of the first courses that they have developed is the one that is related to disabled etiquette. So, you know, I think we're going in the right direction. All right, ma'am?
Thank you, Mr. Vickham. I do think that we are going in the direction, but I think we are going too slow. And I say too slow because sometimes I know they're looking at other policies and other policies will be placed on the red or green paper and next minute they're passed. But to me, even Mr. Johnson, I'm not sure of the correct wages that a person with a disability supposed to work for. But there's some policy out there or some paper out there that if you work for a certain amount, and it's not a lot, that you cannot get non-contributory pension. And I don't think that is fair. Mr. Vickham, we are in the year 2020, about to step in 2021. And I don't know, it is some type of money that you have to work for, and it's less than $50. And I don't think, Mr. Vickham, that no disabled person either qualify or not qualify, should be working less than $50 a week, and then you can get non-contributive pension. That is not the way. That should not be happening, Mr. Wickham. That should not be happening. We cannot live on $50 a week. I might not have any children, but thank God people there have 2 and 3 and 4 children. What are they supposed to do with less than $50 a week? Tell me, Mr. Wickham, what you can do, especially now what you're going to the market today. Something is $5 to go back tomorrow, next week, or even next month, it's $10. What am I supposed to do with less than $50 a week?
Okay, ma'am. All right, ma'am. I want to thank you for the contribution and for the exchange that we had. As I said, I hope that you gave us a lot to chew on. All right. Thanks a lot for calling. We're gonna take another call and we continue. Someone is just telling me that the old Transport Board designated buses were limited in size. They're about the size of one of the Hino minibuses. They did have hydraulic lifts. Additionally, some of the older ones had designated wheelchair areas. So the suggestion is coming forward that the original orientation, one could argue, with the Transport Board is it did have some specialized facilities for a disabled person. But I think that we all agree that we're in a better place now, that they can catch the same bus as you or me. Down to brass tacks, good afternoon. Good afternoon and welcome. You're on the air. Good afternoon and welcome. You are on the air.
Good afternoon.
434-1790. Hey, afternoon, sir. How you doing?
Yeah, I'm okay. We're all here.
Hey, Raul, how you going?
I'm heated, Bob. It's really hot, boys.
Man, that's good.
Yeah, but it's extremely hot. Yeah, but I guess...
I hear it hot outside, too. I'm hot inside.
Right. Very hot inside. Yeah, hot inside.
Yeah.
Inside is heated. Definitely so. Mm. Or I hear the exuberance coming from you, and you're so elated to hear about the by-election and what have you.
You're happy.
Well, I equally, like yourself, full of exuberance too. And the interesting, you were talking about Mr. Rowe, he runs a place, I think, at Gun Hill, a restaurant or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
That's right, but yeah.
The interesting thing about this candidature is, by you see, you're hearing muted that the DLP is going to run Dr. Esther Bear, Sekunda North, you're hearing that, et cetera. But by Thursday to weekend, you're going to hear the Barbados, the party candidate announced. But that's not the issue that I want you to take.
So when we hear the Barbados Labour Party candidate, is it going to blow everybody out of the water?
You listen to me. Everyone wants to take note of what I'm telling you here now. Listen to me properly.
All right.
That when you hear that announcement, it is the big announcement who's going to run the campaign. It's really trouble. You know, Muhammad Ali went to Zaire to fight. When he came back to the States, he had to fight Joe Buckner. When the reporters pushed the mic in his face and asked him, where's you to say, Muhammad? He says, where's Buckner? Just let him know trouble is in town. So that's what's going
to happen. All right.
Where's Buckner? Let him know trouble is in town. But listen, that is so interestingly posed. You can imagine, stop for a second, Peter, and imagine Glenn Clark going around with who gets the candidacy, and he's alongside them saying, well, you know, you can imagine that. You can imagine the kind of fortification and support that person is going to have.
Mm-hmm.
But Dr. Esther, go up against the brick wall. I know when you hear who is running the campaign, then all hell is going to break loose. This is where it's going. And it's going to be a barometer, too.
Mm-hmm.
This will be used as a barometer going forward, you know. This is going to have a lot. Huh? You said something?
I agree with you. It's going to be a barometer, but I think that, as I said, from what I've been hearing, the candidates are exciting.
I know who it is.
The candidate on the BLP side is exciting. Yeah.
I know who it is.
I was saying earlier that to the guy that I wondered whether, and I'm being serious when I say this, I wonder whether the Democratic Labour Party wants to consider whether or not there's anything to be gained by running a candidate. Professionally, my view is that there's really not a whole lot to be gained. You are essentially setting up yourself to be beaten And the question is it better to be beaten in a race that you have not contested? Or is it better to be beaten in a race where you've contested?
Yeah.
Expended effort and basically lost. And then be in a situation where you have to argue to people, well, the candidate did better than the previous one, so that's an indication that you've improved. And then even if you decide to run, who are you going to run? You're going to run back the old Jet to Hints? Or are you going to bring Exit Bicycle is from what I'm hearing. You're going to bring Hover from St. George South and face the accusation that will be made that she is essentially, to use a popular phrase, cold soup warmed over.
That is going to be so interesting. I can tell you, you're going to be in the island to go around some of those meetings and what have you. I hope you're around to run your
even if I am not here, sorry? You can rest assured the analysis will be done. So I will follow the meetings virtually and I'm going to follow the election. So one way or the other, the analysis will be done.
But we can, you know, who's going to be Barbados Labour Party candidate and then keep note, as I've said to you, who's going to run the campaign is the crux of the matter here. And the theme, the theme that will be news. Quickly, we had the problem with vendors, and the Minister of Education has come out and put a pronouncement and a clarity as to about vendors. And I think you could follow the minister because she made it abundantly clear they're not about displacing vendors now or stopping people from making a livelihood. So that will clear all of that concern about vendors. All she's asked is that the vendors sell things that will be more supportive to the young children, less sugary drinks, more fruit, et cetera, et cetera. But what she says, like something like, work with me, work with y'all. And I can follow that would be a good solution. But keep your ears to the ground. It is going to be, I can't even use the Beijing term, and pepper in the coming election. I regard you, sir.
All right, sir. Thanks a lot for calling.